Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Thursday, July 9th, 2020. Coming up this hour.
Daily coronavirus infections in the U.S. hit a fresh high.
Cases in California hit a record while Texas reports its highest deaths yet.
Calls for a national mask mandate gather steam from Chicago to Miami.
And the White House starts a push to reopen schools across the country.
Governor Cuomo says he will make a decision next month on reopening schools. Plus, the Supreme Court rules today about President Trump's taxes. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm John Stashower in sports. The Nets have added an NBA veteran, and the Ivy League is the first college conference to cancel all sports in the fall.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak on Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning. I'm Karen Moscow.
I'm Nathan Hager. Bloomberg Daybreak is brought to you by SEI. Asset managers don't get results that are off the charts when their solutions are off the shelf. Learn how SEI's operating platform can turn infrastructure into a competitive advantage at seic.com/IMS.
And S&P futures are lower this morning. It is 5:01 on Wall Street, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures down 3 points. Dow futures down 41. NASDAQ futures are higher, up 21. The DAX in Germany is up 1.25%. CAC in Paris up 0.2%. And the FTSE 100 is lower, down 0.25%. 10-year Treasury up 4/32, yield 0.64%. The yield on the 2-year, 0.15%. And NYMEX crude oil is down 0.3% at $40.78 a barrel. Nathan.
Karen, coronavirus infections in the U.S. have hit another daily record. California is reporting a new high in cases, as Governor Gavin Newsom walks a fine line between alarm and reassurance. Here with more is Ed Baxter from our Bloomberg 960 newsroom in San Francisco.
Governor Newsom on one hand talks about the dramatic increase in the number of cases, but then says the state is well prepared and we will get through this.
We will. There's no question in my mind about that. The question is when, and that determines basis on the determination of how we conduct ourselves, how we behave.
And this, as the state reports, the biggest daily jump since the pandemic began. As alarming, though, is the 14-day positivity rate climbing to 7.1% from 6.8%. In San Francisco, I'm Ed Baxter, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Ed, thank you. In Florida, Miami-Dade County reports its highest level of hospitalization since April. The mayor of Miami is calling for a national mandate on masks ahead of President Trump's visit to the state tomorrow. Bloomberg's Denise Pellegrini reports.
Mayor Frances Suarez calls wearing a mask a low-cost, high-yield way to deal with COVID-19.
It doesn't damage anyone's business, and it could significantly improve, you know, the circumstances. It's a no-brainer.
Suarez, who is a Republican, says we can't just keep shutting down and reopening the economy, and he wants a long-term strategy. Denise Pellegrini, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Denise Suarez isn't alone in pushing for a national mandate on masks. Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker says it might be the most important measure to save lives.
We need a national masking mandate. We instituted ours in Illinois on May 1st, one of the first in the nation, and it aligns with our most significant downward shifts in our infection rate.
In testimony to the House Homeland Security Committee, Governor Pritzker called for a stronger national response to the pandemic.
Meantime, in Texas, we're seeing a second straight day of record deaths from the virus. That has Houston Mayor Sylvester Turner canceling the state's Republican convention.
This convention is not moving forward, and it's because of the public health risk that it poses.
And Houston's mayor is also pushing back against proposals to reopen schools in August, saying it's premature for those discussions.
Still, the Trump administration is pushing for classes to reopen nationwide.
We hope every school in America is able to open this fall.
Vice President Mike Pence was joined by Education Secretary Betsy DeVos at a coronavirus task force briefing focused on restarting face-to-face education.
Ultimately, it's not a matter of if schools should reopen. It's simply a matter of how. They must fully open, and they must be fully operational.
The push sets up a potential fight between federal and local authorities, some of whom are planning only part-time in-person learning this fall.
Meantime, a top health official in Tulsa, Oklahoma, says President Trump's campaign rally in the city likely contributed to a spike in cases. Bloomberg's John Tucker joins us live with the details. John, good morning.
And Karen, Tulsa County accounts for about a quarter of Oklahoma's nearly 18,000 infections. The daily cases just eclipsed the county's one-week average. And the Tulsa health director, Bruce Dorrit, says events in the past few weeks likely contributed to that. He's referring to the June 20th rally, with an estimated 6,200 people gathered indoors, often without masks. The crowd estimate from Tulsa's fire department would make it the largest indoor U.S. event since March. The president plans to hold another rally Saturday inside an airplane hangar in New Hampshire. John Tucker, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, John, thank you. There are more than 120 coronavirus vaccine candidates in the works, but the timeline for most of them remains cloudy. Merck is among the companies working on a shot. CEO Ken Frazier sat down for a conversation with David Rubenstein on Leadership Live, heard weekly on Bloomberg Television. He cautions against hopes for a vaccine in the coming months.
The fastest vaccine ever developed was our mumps vaccine, and that took 4 years. So now we know that the urgency of the situation is going to cause us to try to move quickly, but never, ever at the expense of safety.
With so many shots in the works, experts say we could end up with several vaccines. The most optimistic estimates call for the first to be ready in 6 months.
Coming up today, we get the latest reading on the economic fallout from the virus. Economists predict another 1.3 million Americans filed unemployment claims last week. Here with more is Bloomberg's Vinnie Del Giudice.
Jobless claims have been running above 1 million since mid-March, peaking at 6.9 million at the end of that month. Bloomberg Economics says new virus cases pose a threat to the fragile recovery in the labor market and is warning of new job cuts in services such as leisure and hospitality. Vinnie Del Giudice, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thanks, Vinnie. Jobless claims in New Jersey are running above 1 million, with 30% of the state's workforce filing claims since March. Later today, we discuss the slump and New Jersey's response to the pandemic with Governor Phil Murphy. Tune in for that conversation at 5 p.m. Wall Street time on Bloomberg Radio and Television.
And S&P futures are lower, down 3 points. Dow futures down 39. NASDAQ futures up 22. NYMEX crude oil is down 0.25% or 11 cents at $40.79 a barrel. Straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news. This is Bloomberg.
All right, Karen, thank you. It is 5:07 on Wall Street. Now let's bring in Michael Barr for more on what's going on around the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nathan. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo says the decision on whether schools will reopen for in-person learning in September will be made by the state during the first week of August. Cuomo says the federal government has no authority on school reopenings. He made his comments in response to President Donald Trump calling for schools to reopen. Meanwhile, New York Mayor Bill de Blasio said the city's 1.1 million students will have a blended learning schedule in order to maintain fewer students in a school building at any given time.
Here's the deal. For the vast majority of kids in the vast majority of schools, you'll be going to school, to the classroom, either 2 days a week or 3 days a week, depending on the week.
De Blasio says the other days students will be taught remotely. Connecticut's governor says they plan on reopening schools on time. Governor Ned Lamont spoke with Bloomberg's David Weston.
Because we have an infection rate less than 1%, because we're meeting all the metrics, we are planning to open our schools on time in late August, September, a normal school day, so there's not a lot of back and forth, some days on, some days off. I think that's better for the kids and certainly for the employers in getting our economy going again. They like to know what the work schedule is of the people who are working for them.
New Jersey's Motor Vehicles Agency was overwhelmed for the second straight day after reopening Tuesday. It will extend its hours, but Governor Phil Murphy warned that long lines will continue for a bit. The agency's offices, closed since March 15th, were swamped by customers seeking driving tests, automobile registrations, license renewals, and other documents. The Supreme Court is expected to rule on whether Congress and the Manhattan District Attorney can see President Donald Trump's taxes and other financial records that the president has fought hard to keep private. The case, which could be resolved today, tests the balance of power between the White House and Congress, as well as Trump's claim that he can't be investigated while he holds office. 2 days after a judge ordered the controversial Dakota Access Oil Pipeline to shut by early August, its owner, Energy Transfer, is vowing to schedule shipments and has made no moves to take it offline.
Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg. Nathan.
Okay, Michael, thank you. It's 5:09 on Wall Street. Time for the Burden Accountants and Advisors Sports Report. Good morning, John Stashar.
Good morning, Nathan. The Ivy League has led the way once again. It was the Ancient Eight that was the first to cancel games. The Ivy scrapped its postseason basketball tournaments on March 10th, the day before the NBA stopped play, and soon after everyone did. Now the Ivy, the first to cancel fall sports, including football. Players will be allowed to practice. No word on whether games will instead be played in the spring. Connecticut Senator Richard Blumenthal says the major college sports leagues should follow suit. Last night in Orlando, the return of Major League Soccer, and before the game, over 100 African-American players took a knee and raised their fists. NYCFC plays tonight against Philadelphia. The depleted Nets are headed to Orlando for the NBA restart. Four Nets aren't playing, so Brooklyn has signed 40-year-old Jamal Crawford, who's played for eight teams in his 19-year career. An update on Mets summer camp from new manager Luis Rojas.
Once we go through screening, we go through the distancing on, you know, fulfill protocols that we've been doing here, I think we get on the field and we have fun. And, you know, so that challenge over, you know, seeing it, anticipating it from the beginning, I think it's actually going really well.
At Angels camp, two-way player Shohei Ohtani, who hasn't pitched in 2 years, took the mound and had eight walks. The baseball season, of course, is supposed to be without fans, but at Wrigley Field, at least some fans will have the chance to buy seats at the rooftop buildings across the street. The city approved it. The Cubs own most of them. They are charging $350 a seat. John Stashauer, Bloomberg Sports. Nathan.
And John, another company is cutting Washington Redskins merchandise from its site, and it's a big one. Amazon now joins Walmart, Target, and Nike in casting out a team name that contains a racial slur. According to a letter reviewed by Bloomberg, the e-commerce giant told sellers they had 48 hours to review and remove Redskins products flagged by Amazon. For years, activists have lobbied the NFL's Redskins to change their name. Owner Daniel Snyder said last week that the organization is now reviewing its name. S&P futures lower by 2 points. This is Bloomberg. Bloomberg Sports is brought to you by Burden Accountants and Advisors. Uncertain about your financial future? Let Burden serve as your trusted advisor and create innovative solutions to help protect you, your family, and your business. Visit BurdenLLP.com.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. European stocks are snapping a two-day losing streak as investors kept faith with economic support policies, helped by some reassuring earnings news. The dollar is fluctuating along with U.S. stock index futures. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures down about 6 points. Dow futures down 62. NASDAQ futures up 16. The DAX in Germany is up 1.2%. 10-year Treasury up 3/32, yield 0.65%. The yield on the 2-year 0.15%. NYMEX crude oil is down 0.3% or 12 cents at $40.78 a barrel. COMEX gold is up 0.1% or $2.60 at $18.23.20 an ounce. The euro, 1.1324 against the dollar. British pound, 1.2640, and the yen, 107.32. And today we are watching for the weekly report on initial jobless claims at 8:30 Wall Street time. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael, good morning.
Good morning, Karen. The nation has reached a grim milestone. The number of COVID-19 infections in the country has reached over 3 million cases. More than 60,000 positive diagnoses were confirmed yesterday alone. The Supreme Court is expected to rule on whether Congress and the Manhattan District Attorney can see President Trump's taxes and other financial records that the president has fought hard to keep private. The case, which could be resolved today, tests Trump's claim that he can't be investigated while he holds office. Presumptive Democratic nominee Joe Biden will call for a moderate approach toward reviving the U.S. economy if elected president. Biden will deliver his economic speech today in Pennsylvania. Global News, 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg. Nathan.
All right, Michael, thanks. It's 5:19 on Wall Street, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak, and Mark Chandler is with us right now, Chief Market Strategist at Bannockburn Global. Mark, good morning. You got to wonder whether some of the fluctuations that we're seeing in the futures markets and with the dollar are coming ahead of the release of the latest weekly jobless claims. We've had some pretty positive economic news of late. What do you think we're going to get later this morning?
Well, I think, Nathan, good morning. I kind of have been thinking that there's been when you look at a lot of the strong economic data, and we are seeing some suggesting that the economy's got some nice momentum going into Q3. However, the jobs data has actually been lagging behind expectations. It's remarkable that here we are, and this is going to be covering the week of July 4th, which is the holiday shortened week in the U.S., and we're still looking at well over a million people filing unemployment benefits for the first time. And I think this becomes particularly important because later this month we've got a couple of fiscal cliffs. One is that $600 a week payment, extra unemployment insurance that expires at the end of the month. And about a week or so before that, we have the end of the freeze on foreclosures and evictions. And with this kind of rise in unemployment claims, it makes it difficult to really justify pulling away the punch bowl, I think.
So do you think that we're going to need more fiscal support then to keep the momentum going in the market?
I don't know any momentum. I think we need more stimulus to support the economy. The market seems to be doing fine on its own. You know, the NASDAQ just closed at record highs. And I kind of think that's part of the challenge here is that a lot of the liquidity that the central banks are providing is lifting asset prices, not necessarily stimulating the economy directly.
So what effect could dial backs that we're starting to see in many cities and states have on the momentum for the recovery that we're in of late?
You're right. You know, we're seeing several Fed officials commenting on that as well, suggesting that maybe the recovery is going to be uneven and less dramatic, at least in Q3, than many people hoped for. So I think that we're going to be watching those states closely. You look at several of those states, California, Texas, Florida, and you've got a good chunk of the economy there, about a third of the economy. So we're going to be watching that closely. But so far, a lot of that hit is in Q2. And we knew that Q2 is going to be horrible. By horrible, I mean a loss, a contraction at an annualized pace of something between, say, 30 and 40% or so.
Can the dollar continue to look past the rising COVID numbers? We've had some pretty strong momentum when it comes to the dollar weakening as haven demand starts to slip away. What's your outlook for the dollar going forward?
Yeah, Nathan, I'm in that camp that looks for a weaker dollar. What strikes me is that the dollar could rally on a couple of interesting fundamental developments. These include the Fed's balance sheet has shrunk for the last 3 weeks, and we'll get an update later today. Secondly, our Fed funds rate has crept up. It's only a couple of basis points, but it's taking place in a context in which the ECB's balance sheet just jumped by almost 10% as it made over €1 trillion loans to European banks at minus 100 basis point yield. And their equivalent of Fed funds, the effective Fed funds, like weighted by volume, fell to new record lows earlier this week, and yet the euro continues to rally. So I think this reflects a change in sentiment towards the dollar.
You mentioned some of the commentary from the Fed. We've also heard from Loretta Mester at the Cleveland Fed saying that the rising case count poses downside risks to the economy. What could that mean for the Fed's policy path going forward, do you think?
Yeah, that's a tough one because you think that the Fed's got its foot all the way on the accelerator now. But I think that many people have begun, including the Fed, of course, talking about looking at what other countries are doing. And one thing that looks like a sort of a page in the playbook could be what people call yield curve control, which basically targets something. Right now, the Fed targets the Fed funds rate. But they could target something further out on the curve, say it's 3-year or 5-year. Australia targets the 3-year at the same rate that they target the overnight money, 25 basis points. The Bank of Japan targets a 10-year yield around zero. And so the Federal Reserve, I think the latest minute showed a bit reluctance to do so. But with supply, Treasury supply still coming in, I think they'll try to act to hold off a premature rise in U.S. yields. And that would be one thing that they could do.
All right, Mark Chandler, good having you on with us this morning. Thanks so much. Mark Chandler is Chief Market Strategist at Bannockburn Global. S&P futures right now are down 7 points. Dow futures lower by 83. NASDAQ futures higher by 15 points as we look forward to the weekly jobless claims coming out at 8:30 Wall Street time. Euro 1.1322 against the dollar. The yen is at 107.32. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Bloomberg 11:30 weather. We got a heat advisory in effect till 6 tonight. We're going up to near 90 degrees. Could see some showers this evening. We'll get down to the low 70s. Breezy tomorrow, rainy, high near 80, 75 currently.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York.
Bloomberg 1130
to Washington, D.C.
Bloomberg 991
to Boston.
Bloomberg 1061
to San Francisco.
Bloomberg 960
to the country.
Sirius XM Channel 119
and around the globe.
The Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com.
This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
It's 5:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow, and we're just about 4 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. U.S. futures, well, S&P futures are lower to start the day after coronavirus infections in the U.S. hit another daily record. California's reporting a new high in cases as Governor Gavin Newsom urges residents to wear face coverings.
We're seeing hospitalization rates grow. It's because people are not wearing their masks. People are not, for many different reasons and many different circumstances, practicing the physical distancing.
The governor of Illinois is also pushing for more masks. J.B. Pritzker says a national mandate could be the most important measure to save lives.
We instituted ours in Illinois on May 1st, one of the first in the nation, and it aligns with our most significant downward shifts in our infection rate.
Meantime, in Texas, we're seeing a second straight day of record deaths from the virus. That is Houston Mayor Sylvester Turner pushing back against plans to reopen schools.
Do everything we can to get this virus under control today. And then we can see where we will be in August or September.
Still, the Trump administration is pushing for classes to restart nationwide. Education Secretary Betsy DeVos addressed the issue at a coronavirus task force briefing.
Ultimately, it's not a matter of if schools should reopen. It's simply a matter of how. They must fully open, and they must be fully operational.
The push sets up a fight between federal and local authorities, some of whom are planning only part-time in-person classes this fall.
Meantime, a top health official in Tulsa, Oklahoma, says President Trump's campaign rally in the city likely contributed to a spike in cases. Bloomberg's John Tucker joins us live with the details. John, good morning.
And Karen, the Tulsa Health Department says data and timing suggest a relationship between the increase in Tulsa County infections and the rally on June 20th. The president held that event despite pleas from local authorities to delay it. The county reported a jump in cases this week that eclipsed its one-week average. The president plans another rally this weekend in New Hampshire. John Tucker, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, John, thank you. Coming up today, we get the latest reading on the economic fallout from the virus. Economists predict another 1.3 million Americans filed unemployment claims last week. Look out for that data at 8:30 a.m. Wall Street time.
And again, S&P futures are lower. They're down 7 points now. Dow futures down 87. And NASDAQ futures remain higher, up 16. The 10-year Treasury up 4/32, yield 0.65%, and the yield on the two-year 0.15%. The British pound is at 1.2639 against the dollar, the euro 1.1324. And straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news, and this is Bloomberg.
All right, Karen, thanks. 5:33 on Wall Street, and Michael Barr has more on what's going on around the world. Michael?
Thank you very much, Nathan. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo says the decision on whether schools will reopen for in-person learning in September will be made by the state during the first week of August. Cuomo says the federal government has no authority on school reopenings. He made his comments in response to President Trump calling for schools to reopen and threatened to withhold funding if they don't. New York Mayor Bill de Blasio says he anticipates a blended learning program for the city's 1.1 million students when the nation's largest public school system reopens.
Blended learning simply means at some points in the week, you're learning in person in the classroom. At other points in the week, you're learning remotely. And we all know remote learning is not perfect, but we've also seen a lot of kids benefit greatly from it during these last months. And we know we'll be able to do it even better in the months ahead.
De Blasio said masks and other PPE will be mandatory. Connecticut plans to reopen schools on time. Governor Ned Lamont, speaking to Bloomberg's David Westin, says while the state wants to reopen for business out of an abundance of caution, they aren't opening bars yet.
We've got about 95% of our economy open right now. But when it came to bars and nightclubs and big entertainment venues, I listened to governors from Florida and Texas and the such saying they regret that they did open their bars when they did. And that was an opportunity for some super spreading to go on. We don't want that to happen. So in abundance of caution, we're not going to open them yet.
A Black Lives Matter mural will be painted today right in front of Trump Tower in Manhattan. President Trump tweeted earlier the mural would denigrate the luxury of Fifth Avenue. The Supreme Court is set to rule this morning on two big cases concerning President Trump's tax returns. Bloomberg's June Grasso has more.
The Supreme Court will issue the last opinions of the term today. Those include two of the most controversial cases of the term over subpoenas for President Trump's financial records from Congress and a New York prosecutor. Trump argues that lawmakers are trying to engage in law enforcement beyond Congress's constitutional powers and contends presidents should have absolute immunity from state criminal investigations while in office. Both cases could have profound long-term ramifications, potentially giving presidents sweeping new protections from investigations while in office. June Grasso, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Global news 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg. Nathan.
All right, Michael, thanks for coming up to 5:36 on Wall Street. It's time for the Burden Accountants and Advisors Sports Report. Here's John Stashower.
All right, Nathan, the Ivy League, citing university restrictions on travel and visitors, has canceled all fall sports. They say it's about policies, not finances. Of course, the Ivy doesn't have as much at stake financially as major conferences. We've got those huge TV contracts that are used to support all the other sports on campus. But it was the Ivy League that led the way back in March. It was the first conference to cancel its postseason basketball tournaments. At Stanford, the athletic department looking at a $25 million deficit for the fiscal year. So the school has eliminated 11 of its 36 teams, effective at the end of this upcoming academic year. The Baltimore Ravens figured out that if they do allow fans in, but with social distancing restrictions, they'd have about 14,000 in a 71,000-seat stadium. The Mets' J.D. Davis on what to expect without fans.
We got to find a way a little bit. It's going to be different. It's going to be, you know, obviously everybody's going to feel a little bit isolated, especially, you know, having our own teammates being in the stands, you know, 6 to 10 feet apart. But you know what? We love playing this game. We enjoy being around each other. So I don't think it's going to be that much of a concern.
And no fans at Citi Field, but they will have cardboard cutouts with pictures of Mets season ticket holders. And the Jersey Devils' season is over. When they return next season, their coach will be Lindy Ruff, who's been an NHL head coach for 20 years. He's currently an assistant with the Rangers. 40-year-old Jamal Crawford was unemployed, but with so many Brooklyn Nets not part of the NBA restart, the Nets have signed Crawford. This will be his 19th. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports. Nathan?
All right, John, thank you. It is 5:37 on Wall Street. Time for the Tri-State Business Report. Here's Bloomberg's Ed Corey.
A quarter of New York City's apartment renters haven't paid since March, according to the Community Housing Improvement Program. Some landlords with their own bills to pay are running out of savings, and the city is bracing for hundreds of millions of dollars in delinquent property taxes. Manhattan's rental market is starting to show the damage from a pandemic-fueled exodus. The borough's apartment vacancy rate in June hit the highest level on record. Available listings surged 85% from a year earlier to 10,789, according to appraiser Miller Samuel and brokerage Douglas Elliman Real Estate. Meanwhile, New Yorkers looking to move to Westchester are short on options. The number of single-family homes listed for sale in the county plunged the most on record in the second quarter, according to data going back to 1995. Sales in Westchester dropped 21%, the biggest quarterly fall since 2009. That's your Bloomberg Tri-State Business Report. I'm Ed Corey.
Thanks, Ed. It's 5:38 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Radio is on the air from San Francisco to New York, London to Hong Kong. Let's check in with our global news team for some of the top stories heard on our 300 affiliate radio stations around the world.
I'm Jeff Mullinger, and on WTVN in Columbus, I'm reporting J.P. Morgan is suspending its plan to start reopening offices in Columbus.
I'm Gina Cervetti, and for WBBM in Chicago, we're watching for earnings from Walgreens.
I'm Caroline Hepcorn, Bloomberg DAB Digital Radio in London. We're reporting on warnings that the Chancellor's plan to revive the UK economy may not be enough to avoid mass unemployment.
I'm Steve Poduskin on 1010 Winds in New York. We're talking about New Jersey-based Bed Bath & Beyond, planning to close 200 of its stores.
I'm Ed Corey on WWJ in Detroit. I'm reporting GM has suffered a blow in a bid to punish Fiat Chrysler over alleged union bribes.
And those are some of the stories our 2,700 Bloomberg journalists and analysts are working on this morning around the world. Now, some other stories we're following. Warren Buffett is dropping down the ranks of the world's richest. His $69 billion fortune puts him in eighth place on the Bloomberg Billionaires list. That's the lowest Buffett's been since the index started in 2012. You can blame his generosity in part. Buffett gave away almost $3 billion of Berkshire Hathaway stock this week. U.S. companies slashed dividends in the second quarter at the fastest pace since 2009. That's according to S&P Dow Jones indices. Shareholders saw a net reduction of almost $43 billion in payouts on common stock. The pace of the cuts now appears to have slowed down. It's 5:40 on Wall Street, and the latest edition of Bloomberg Business Week is online now. It's the heist issue, including the empty frames that remain the art world's biggest mystery. Terminal customers can receive a complimentary subscription at MAG Go and listen to Business Week with Carol Masser and Jason Kelly right here on Bloomberg Radio, or you can watch it on YouTube weekdays from 2 to 6 p.m. Wall Street time. Get global business, finance, and tech news on your TV, computer, or mobile device. Just visit YouTube.com and search Bloomberg Global News. S&P futures lower by 5 points right now. Dow futures down 73. NASDAQ futures still higher by almost 21 points. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Bloomberg Sports was brought to you by Burden Accountants and Advisors. Uncertain about your financial future? Let Burden serve as your trusted advisor and create innovative solutions to help protect you, your family, and your business. Visit BurdenLLP.com.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business App, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow, and S&P futures are trimming their losses right now, down about 1.5 points. Dow futures down 39, and NASDAQ futures higher, up 48. The DAX in Germany is up 1.25%. 10-year Treasury up 3/32, yield 0.65%. Yield on the 2-year, 0.15%. NYMEX crude oil is down 0.3% or 12 cents at $40.78 a barrel. COMEX gold is up 0.1% or $2.40 at $18.23 an ounce. The euro, 1.1330 against the dollar. The yen is at 107.32. And today we are watching for the weekly report on initial jobless claims out at 8:30 Wall Street time. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, a grim milestone for the nation as the number of confirmed COVID-19 cases crossed 3 million. Now some states are warning their hospitals are under an unprecedented strain and could hit capacity. The Supreme Court is set to rule this morning on two big cases concerning President Trump. Trump has been trying to keep his tax returns and other financial information from being released to prosecutors in New York, as well as congressional investigators. The Pentagon's top leaders are going before Congress for the first time in months. They're likely to be questioned today on several major controversies, including President Trump's handling of protests near the White House last month. Global news 24 hours a day, on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg. Nathan.
Okay, Michael, thank you. It is 5:48 on Wall Street. Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak. Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager. Some of the world's richest investors are starting to question the fees they're paying to wealth managers. This is one of the most read stories on the Bloomberg Terminal this morning. And Bloomberg's Ben Stupples joins us from London now to tell us more about it. Good to have you with us on the program, Ben. From what I understand, this is based on a survey of wealth management clients. Tell us a little bit more about it. Who is being surveyed here?
Yeah, hi there, Nathan. Yeah, this is a survey of more than 2,500 individuals. And these individuals have 1 million of investable assets. So that's, you know, their wealth, excluding things like collectibles, their primary home. So these are individuals that we would call high net worth individuals in the wealth space. They're not ultra high net worth, about 30 million or more, and they're certainly not billionaires, but it's definitely a pretty comprehensive look into how what we would say the lowest rung of the rich and what they're thinking right now.
Okay, so what are they thinking then about the fees they're paying to wealth managers? What's their biggest complaint?
Yeah, well, they're not happy, Nathan. Yeah, very not happy indeed. And I would say that it's a few bugbears around fees, one of the main ones being transparency. In fact, that's the top one. But also the way that fees are charged. So instead of being based, for example, on performance, a lot of the rich are pretty unhappy about the fact that it's just based on the amount, or just based on the assets under management. And one thing we should stress is that, you know, the survey was carried out before the pandemic, just before, in fact, around January and February. But actually, what I think is going to happen is the pandemic is actually, if anything, increase the scrutiny over these matters. You know, the rich, sort of the lowest high net worth individuals, certainly want, it seems, sort of a real return on what they're getting from their wealth managers. These are individuals that don't have their own family offices, sort of their own personal investment firms. So they are relying very much on their wealth management firms to provide them with the bulk of what's going on with their assets. And therefore, fees are very important for them.
So does this point to some ways that wealth managers can justify their fees, sort of different ways that they can go about convincing their clients that, yeah, there's good reason to keep holding on to our advice?
Yeah, there's a few examples pointed out in the report. One that I just saw before we came on air is one top, maybe won't name it, top British bank that has a really personalized service for these sort of clients. And it's effectively an online concierge where if you want to go out for a restaurant, for example, the bank helps you out. And if you want to go see a pop concert, for example, they'll get you exclusive tickets. And that is highlighted in the report as one way that wealth managers can help to provide an edge over competitors, but also help to be a real holistic service for their clients. And sort of helping to reflect what happens at the top end of the tree with the billionaires, because they have a whole staff of team who would do that for them. But at the lower levels down of the wealthy, yeah, the wealth managers can provide that service and make, although they may be providing it to everyone of their clients who are in the space, it nonetheless can feel quite personalized.
You know, it's interesting to see this evidence that, you know, some of the well-heeled are questioning these fees when, you know, global wealth is continuing to climb to all-time highs. So it almost makes an argument that some of these wealth managers could justify their fees already. I mean, it's not like people are losing money, at least on a general scale.
I think that's a fair point to make. But I would certainly say about the pandemic is that the choppy markets, the volatility we've seen, is definitely going to draw attention to performance. And I think something we've written about on the wealth team is how the wealthy have been using their time at home really to sort out their homework on their wealth, you know, and that includes things like fees. So the banks may be able to turn around and wealth managers may be able to turn around and say, hey, actually, you're getting a good return. These fees are fair in our view, but I think nonetheless, the wealthy are certainly looking more at this area of their wealth during the pandemic due to the volatility and frankly, due to, like many of us, having more time on our hands during these last few months.
Well, it's a fascinating look into what some of the world's most well-heeled are thinking at this time. Bloomberg's Ben Stupples, thanks again for being with us this morning. Karen?
All right, Nathan, thank you. It is 5:53 on Wall Street. It's time for the Bloomberg Law Report. Let's get to the legal stories we're watching this morning from Bloomberg's Jeff Bellinger.
The IRS updated its reporting rules for businesses that paid sick leave and family leave benefits to workers affected by the coronavirus. The online prescription marketplace GoodRx will more clearly inform customers about its third-party data collection policies and provide an opt-out link. A business group had found that GoodRx did not meet industry standards for digital advertising. The Supreme Court cleared the way for Texas to carry out its first execution since the start of the pandemic.
Bloomberg Law. Everything you need on one legal research platform. Guidance, analysis, and Bloomberg Market Intelligence. Find out more at BloombergLaw.com.
Now, in another legal development, the Supreme Court expanded religious rights in two cases yesterday. Justices upheld rules giving employers broad rights to refuse to offer birth control through health plans and giving religious organizations a bigger exemption from discrimination suits. For more on the 7-2 decision covering the Obamacare contraceptive mandate, Bloomberg's June Grasso speaks to Richard Garnett, a professor at Notre Dame Law School.
The Trump administration expanded the ability to opt out of paying for contraceptive coverage from houses of worship to include publicly traded companies and universities with religious or moral objections to contraception. Tell us about that decision.
The court's ruling was focused primarily on whether or not the administration followed the correct procedures when it created this accommodation. So it's mainly an administrative law opinion. The court's opinion is not really about whether or not this exemption is a good idea. Now, as you said, the Trump administration expanded the religious exemption that the Supreme Court had affirmed in Hobby Lobby, for example, several years ago, to include entities that had, quote, moral, not just religious, but moral objections to providing contraception coverage in their insurance policies. Reasonable people can disagree about whether that expansion is good policy. The question is just whether the administration kind of followed the correct procedure for creating this exemption. And Justice Thomas for the court said, yes, they did, that there wasn't any kind of unlawful departure from the procedures that are required in order for an agency to change its rules, and that the accommodation was therefore permissible.
Justices Elena Kagan and Stephen Breyer joined the majority, but Kagan wrote a concurring opinion, and she said the lower courts could still consider arguments that the administration didn't engage in reasoned decision-making. What is she referring to here?
So in administrative law, you have questions about sort of following the correct procedures, but you also have questions that involve making sure that agencies are, as she put it, engaged in reasoned decision-making, that they're not being kind of arbitrary and capricious, that the record's built up well enough. And I take her point to be that since this particular case involved challenges more to the procedure that the administration had followed, that it would still be possible, you know, again, in a later stage in this litigation, if this litigation keeps on going, to say, okay, maybe it is true that the proper pathways were followed, but it's still the case that the agencies have to provide some evidence that they rationally considered all factors and balanced all costs and benefits, and that maybe that didn't happen here. So for some who are wondering, like, will this case about the contraception mandate ever end? I think that Justice Kagan's point might have been, well, it's not necessarily over yet. There's still other bases to challenge it. But Justice Kagan agrees that the challenge in this case didn't go through.
And that's Notre Dame Law Professor Richard Garnett speaking with Bloomberg's June Grasso. Catch more of that interview, plus analysis of the latest legal news, by subscribing to the Bloomberg Law Podcast or downloading the show at Bloomberg.com/podcasts. And attorneys can find exceptional legal research and business development tools at BloombergLaw.com. S&P futures, they're down 1.5 points. Dow futures down 51. NASDAQ futures higher, up 46. And the 10-year Treasury up 3/32, yield 0.65%. And Bloomberg Daybreak continues. This is Bloomberg.